Zen. Zest, zip, zap, and zing. Number 6. An OSHA talk, given spontaneously at an outdoor meeting to an international audience of thousands of people.
The first question. Why do people criticize you as a self-styled and self-appointed god? There are many things to be understood. It is one of the ancient most reactions of the people. It is not anything new. It happened with Krishna, with Moses, with Christ, with Mahavira, with Buddha, with Muhammad, with Al-Hilas. As far back as one can see, it has been happening all along. The people live in misery and they cannot accept anybody who is not miserable just like themselves. To accept that somebody has become blissful is humiliating to them. It wounds their ego. They would not like a Jesus, a Buddha, a Krishna to be at all, because the height of the Everest suddenly makes them aware where they are. It is said that the camels don't want to go near the mountains. They are very much against the mountains. Perhaps that's why they live in the deserts, where there are the mountains. It is easier for people to live in misery, knowing that this is how life is, because everybody else is also miserable just like them. But to see somebody flowering and they are only thorns, to see somebody fragrant and they are only stinking, to see somebody enlightened and they are nothing but a dark night of the soul, makes them feel really miserable. It multiplies their misery. The only way is to deny, to reject, to say that something like Christ consciousness, Buddhahood, is not possible at all. So it is not only with me that they are reacting that way. That is their own tradition. Always they have done the same thing. They live in misery, and misery is always negative. Remember it as one of the most fundamental laws of life. Misery is an indication of a negative mind. Negativity creates misery. You can see misery, you cannot see their negativity. Misery is visible, It is the circumference, but the center is always no negativity. Bliss happens with yes. The center is yes, then on the circumference there is bliss. Bliss is visible, but the yes is invisible. Soul had a dairy farm in the country where he bred beautiful golden Guernsey cows and also the lovely black and white Holsteins. One day Jack, a friend from the city, came to visit and suggested, "So, why don't you crossbreed your cows? There is a fortune to be made in crossbreeding." Soul thought it sounded like a good idea. "What have I got to lose?" he mused. So he tried it. Sometimes later, the friend came back to visit. "How did the experiment go?" he asked Soul. "Well," answered Soul, "I did like you said. I crossbred the golden Guernsey with the Holstein, and what I got I called a Goldstein. But nobody wanted to buy it." "Why was that?" queried Jack. "Why?" "Because," answered Soul, "when a customer looked over all the other cows, each of them said, 'Moo.' But when the man came over to my Goldstein, she eyed him and said, 'No.'" This "no" is very deep in the people's hearts. A vast "no." No to everything that surpasses them, that is transcendental to their consciousness. No to everything that they have not been able to achieve. No to all the stars. No to the sky. No to all possibilities, potentialities. No to every mirror, because every mirror makes them feel very sad. They look so ugly. One sannyasin was saying to another sannyasin, "Bobo is sure ugly." The other sannyasin said, "He even looks worse than his passport photo." Hearing this, I told Krishna Bharati, my photographer, to take another photo of poor Bobo and make it as beautiful as possible. And I waited and waited, and KB never turned up with the photo. So I inquired him again. I said, "KB, what happened?" He said, when I inquired, "How did that picture of ugly Bobo turn out?" He said, "What can I do? I tried my best, but Champa, our darkroom lady, never developed it. She was afraid to be alone with it in the darkroom." There are problems. When you have an ugly face, it is better to avoid the mirrors. Without the mirrors, you can go on believing that how beautiful you are. Without the mirrors, there is no trouble. The mirror immediately creates the trouble. Suddenly, you can see, this is how you look. And naturally, the first reaction is to destroy the mirror. That is easier than transforming your face. That's a hard task, arduous, uphill. People crucified Jesus. That is destroying a mirror. They poisoned Socrates. That is destroying a mirror. They murdered Al-Hillaz. That is destroying a mirror. Once the mirror is destroyed, they can again relapse back into that dream that they are beautiful. There is nothing to disturb their idea. The second thing to remember is that Bhagavan does not mean God at all. That's a strange misunderstanding. It is understandable if people from the West take them to be synonymous. But even Indian fools do the same. It seems fools have the same quality all over the world. The wise men may differ, but the fools are absolutely agreed with each other. Bhagavan does not mean God. Bhagavan simply means the Blessed One. Hence we have called Buddha Bhagavan. Although he does not believe in any God, if Bhagavan means God, then Buddha cannot be called Bhagavan. It is so clear. He does not believe in the existence of God. Still we have called him Bhagavan. In front of him, for 42 years continuously people called him Bhagavan. He never objected, for the simple reason that the word Bhagavan is not synonymous with the word God. We have called Mahavira Bhagavan and all the 24 Tithankaras of the Jainas, and Jainas are atheists. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in any creator. Why we have called the Tirthankaras Bhagavans? For the simple reason that they have attained to the ultimate bliss. They are the Blessed One. God means a creator, one who has made the world. Certainly I am not a God. I don't take any responsibility of making this world. Not me. A professor was about to set out on an expedition to Africa and the Near East, and he needed an assistant. So he put an advertisement in the newspaper requesting a man who spoke foreign languages, loved to travel, was able to use a gun, and so forth, through a long list of qualifications. It was a pretty rare man who could fit his demanding specifications, and there were no responses to the advertisement. But at the end of a week, I appeared before him. he was a little bewildered, puzzled, but still interviewed me. "Do you like to travel?" asked the professor. "Me?" I said to him, "I hate traveling. Boats make me seasick. Planes I would not get on. And trains are the worst of all." "But you are a linguist," continued the professor. "I presume you speak Hebrew, Arabic, Turkish." "Who? Me?" I interrupted the professor. "I know nothing but my own mother tongue." "Well, can you use a gun?" the professor insisted. "Me? I cannot even carry a gun." Well, the exasperated professor exploded. "Then what did you come here for?" "I saw your ad," I said to him, "and I just came to tell you that on me you should not rely." "You can exclude me out. I am not responsible at all for creating this world. And I don't think there is anybody who will take the responsibility. I am as much an atheist as Mahavira, as Buddha, as Lao Tzu. I don't believe in any God who has created the world. The world is a self-creative process. No creator is needed. The world is creativity. There is no division between the creator and the created. There is no need at all for a God. But Bhagavan is a totally different dimension. It has nothing to do with creating the world. Bhagavan means your ultimate state of bliss. Nobody else can be a witness to my inner bliss. If I have a headache, only I know about it. Nobody else can know it. When the headache disappears, I have to declare that it has disappeared. Nobody else can declare it. Do you think a committee is needed to decide whether I am having a headache or not? Do you think voting is needed? That the country has to vote whether I am having a headache or not? Only I can declare whether I have come home or not. No committee can do it. No voting can decide it. It is absolutely an individual affair. It is nobody else's business at all. If I am not having the headache, should not I declare that I don't need any aspirins anymore? That's all what I have done by declaring that I am a Bhagavan. That all headaches have disappeared. That there is no anxiety in me, no anguish, no desire, no longing for anything. That I am perfectly at ease, relaxed with existence, totally at home. And these people go on criticizing that I am self styled Bhagwan, but so was Krishna. Hindus don't now criticize Krishna. Who appointed Krishna? He himself declares. The Upanishadic seers declared themselves. Do you think there was a committee to appoint that yes, this man can declare Aham Brahmasmi, that I am the ultimate truth? Who appointed Jesus Christ? Do you think that a committee of the great rabbis of Jerusalem decided, voted in favor that Jesus is the only begotten Son of God, that He is a Christ? They were against His declaration. They thought He is a charlatan, that He is a deceiver, and they punished Him for that. Who declared Buddha to be a god? And it is such a simple arithmetic. Do you think ignorant people can declare Gautam Siddhartha a Buddha? Do you think blind people can decide about the man whether he has eyes or not? How the blind can decide? They don't have eyes themselves, so how they can see whether anybody else has got the eyes or not? It has always been a self-styled phenomenon. One has to declare oneself. Nobody else can do it. It cannot be done on my behalf by anybody else. So I say it again, that I am Bhagwan, but Bhagwan does not mean God. Or if you love the word God, then Bhagwan simply means godliness. Obviously, when you have become absolutely blissful, that blissfulness is divine. It is godly. There is nothing more godly than blissfulness. Because out of that blissfulness, many flowers blossom. Love, freedom, deathlessness. It becomes the source of all the values, of all that is good. It is the summum bonum, the ultimate good. Let those blind people go on criticizing. It makes no difference. They are simply trying to console themselves that they are not missing anything. They cannot accept the Buddha, the Christ. They cannot accept me, for the simple reason because to accept me means accepting a challenge, a great challenge. Accepting me means you have now to start working upon yourself. Then you cannot take life for granted anymore. Then your life has to go through a radical change, a revolution. You have to be born anew. The easier way is to deny, to say that this man is deceiving. This is very simple. Anybody can do it. And by denying that anybody has attained godliness, blissfulness, ultimate freedom, truth, you can again relapse into your sleep. You can again fall back into your unconsciousness. These people don't really want to be religious. Their religion is only formal. It does not mean anything. They go to the church, it is a Sunday religion. They go to the temple, they go to the mosque, it is respectable. And it is a good meeting place. Churches are like clubs. Very formal. They don't change anything in you. But they give you a good feeling about yourself that you are religious. And people who go to the churches, to the temples, to the synagogues are going for absolutely wrong reasons. What are their reasons there? They are going there to pray to God, to grant them some of their wishes, some of their desires have to be fulfilled. They have tried hard and they are not succeeding. And they would like God to do some miracles for them. Here is an English public school girl's prayer. Holy Mary, I believe that without sin thou didst conceive. Now I pray in my believing that I may sin without conceiving. They are going there in search for some miracles. They are not interested in discovering the truth. Yes, they are immensely interested in beautiful lies, consolations, confirmations that they are good. That whatsoever they are and wherever they are, it is perfectly right. And the priests have been doing this business. First they create guilt in you and then they console you. Guilt makes you go to the churches, to the temples, because you feel uneasy, and then the priest consoles you, helps you. He has created the wound in the first place and then he puts ointment on your wound and you feel very good. But to be with Jesus or to be with Zarathustra or to be with Muhammad is to be with fire. You will be consumed. You will have to die. Unless you die, you cannot be reborn. The only way to be reborn is to die first. Resurrection first is not possible. First crucifixion, then follows resurrection. And who wants to be crucified? To be with me is crucifixion. And the people who are afraid of me, their only method of protecting themselves from coming to me is to deny, to say that there is nothing, to go there, to create a wall. That's why they are so much against me, criticizing. Just the other day I received a letter from Indore. one of my sannyasins, Gautama, has written that the Shankaracharya of Puri, one of the topmost Hindu priests, has been in the city and he has been condemning you like anything. And Gautama has asked me that in the same breath he was saying both the things. He was saying that the whole existence is divine, that each particle of the earth is divine, that each leaf is divine, all is divine, because whatsoever exists is divine. But this man, Bhagwan Rajneesh, he is not. So he has asked me, except you. Animals are divine, dogs are divine, mosquitoes are divine, bed bugs are divine. I am the only exception. That is a rare compliment. In this vast universe, I am the only exception. The most extraordinary man, of course. But these fools will not even see what they are talking. They are simply repeating scriptures, because the scriptures, Hindu scriptures particularly, say everything is divine. So they are saying, parrot-like, not knowing what they are saying. And then in the same breath they go on criticizing me. I know this man, Niranjan Deva Tirtha, Shankaracharya of Puri. Once we were on the same stage. Just seeing me, he became so angry, almost insane. He stood up and he said, "We both cannot sit on the same stage." Somehow the organizers controlled him, persuaded him. And when I spoke, in the middle he stood up and he said, "I cannot tolerate any more. This is too much. It is against our tradition." I told him that we are not here to talk about tradition, we are here to talk about truth. And truth and tradition are two different things, in fact, two diametrically opposite things. Truth is never traditional, and tradition is never true. Tradition belongs to the crowd, and truth belongs to individual inquirers. The Indian crowd particularly is very much formally religious and informally very irreligious. The Indian mind has a schizophrenic quality. On the surface, very holy, and deep inside, very unholy. It is bound to happen because of thousands of years of repression. Repression of everything that is natural. So whenever an Indian drops his mask, even his original face is not beautiful. It is distorted. He moves from one extreme to another extreme. This is the way of the mob psychology everywhere, but more so in India. The first night, Shapiro was shown to his place for dinner and found himself sharing a table with a well-dressed Frenchman. When Shapiro arrived, the Frenchman rose, bowed and declared, "Bon appétit." Shapiro replied, "Shapiro." This same ritual took place every meal. On the last day of the trip, Shapiro happened to run into the purser and took advantage of the encounter to tell him, "What a pleasant table companion Mr. Bon Appetit has been." "Ah, Mr. Shapiro," said the purser, "Bon Appetit is not his name. That is just French for I wish you a hearty appetite." "Is that so?" said Shapiro. He could not wait to rectify the situation. That evening at dinner, before his companion could do a thing, Shapiro stood up, bowed ceremoniously and declared, "Bon appétit." Whereupon the Frenchman rose and replied, "Shapiro." That's how it goes. The blind man is going to fall either on this side or on that side, and all are blind. And to live with eyes in a country of the blind is really very strange. And that's what the Buddhas have been doing for thousands of years. They are the most strangers, the greatest foreigners in the world, for the simple reason they are at home with existence, but they are foreigners to the mob psychology. The mob psychology is bound to be against them. And the strange thing is, whatsoever they are doing for these people. And these people react in tremendous anger. They become enraged. Just the presence of a Buddha is enough to make people go crazy. They become murderers. They cannot tolerate the presence of a Buddha. Just the other day I heard in the newspapers, the same man who had thrown a dagger to kill me is now organizing a long march from Kolhapur, a 10-day march. It will start from Kolhapur and it will end near the gateless gate of our ashram against me, that the ashram should be closed, that I should be thrown out of the country. Why these people go berserk? There is some fundamental reason behind it. If I am right, then they are all wrong. And of course, there are millions and I am alone. If it is to be decided democratically, then the votes will decide that they are right. But this is not something that can be decided democratically. I declare that I am a self-styled Bhagwan because nobody else can style a Bhagwan. I am self-appointed because nobody else can appoint me. And that's why nobody else can disappoint me either. And the strange thing is that all I am doing here is to help these fools, to help these blind people to gain a little insight into things. When I say I am divine, I am really saying you are divine. This is a challenge. It is a provocation. When I say I am divine, I am saying to you, look, a very ordinary man like me is divine. So you are so extraordinary, you can easily be divine, there is no problem in it. Just accept the challenge. A little search and you can find your reality. Mrs. Markowitz was anxious because it was the first day her little boy was going to leave her and go to school. She tried hard to appear calm, but she could not hide the concern in her voice as she talked to her son that morning. So, my bubala, today you are starting to get grown up. You are going off to school, And bubala, you will be a good boy, do whatever the teacher tells you to, yes? Now, you will get nicely dressed up in your new suit, bubala, and you will play at recess with the other children, but you won't mess up your new suit, will you, my bubala? And bubala, you will come right home after school, okay? Yes, mama, said the little boy, and he went off to school. All day, Mrs. Markowitz sat waiting and worrying. At 3 o'clock, she was at the door waiting for her boy. So, my bubala, how was your first day of school? What did you learn? Tell your mama everything. Well, said the boy, I learned one thing. I learned that my name is not bubala, it is Irving. You are not what you think you are, bubala. Your name is Irving. That's what I am doing here, trying to remind you, bubala, this is not your name. Your name is Bhagwan. But you get angry. A strange bubala. The second question. How many gay guys are needed to screw in a light bulb? Are you mad or something? Why you are after these poor light bulbs? And never give this idea to the gay guys. Because as far as screwing is concerned, whatsoever they do will be wrong. They will always do it wrong. So have mercy on poor light bulbs. And can't you think of any other question? And where we are going to find so many sockets for so many light bulbs. You go on producing light bulbs, and I have to produce sockets for you. And there is an end to everything. Now you have come across with this great idea. How many gay guys are needed? They are not needed at all. The third question. I have to leave soon. In the beginning, I had a lot of questions, but you answered them all. There is only one left. Will you tell me at least two goodbye Italian jokes? That I can do. An Italian immigrant with a distinct accent was bragging about his three children. My fasta babino, he is a doctor. He is one of the best in his field. He makes the $5,000 per year. My second babino is a lawyer, and he make the $75,000 per year. My third boy, he is my finest boy. He is a sports mechanic. What? Inquired his friend. Is a sports mechanic? He is a person that fixes the football games, the basketball games, and all the other sports games. Get it or not? If you cannot get it right now, in the middle of the night, think about it. And suddenly you will start laughing. Then you will get it. It takes a little time. An Italian spent his annual holidays in Brazil. When he returned home, his friend asked him, "So, Mario, how was the sex life in Brazil?" "Mamma mia," exclaimed Mario, bigger confusion. The male neighbors mixing with her female neighbors, bosses with her secretaries, women with her women, men with her men. How it hurts. Now it is even more difficult. You will have to meditate. The last question. The other day, I was afraid of you when you talked about throwing that ugly kissing and hugging Indian out of the ashram. I do not want any angry God. And anyway, he was not kissing you in an ugly way. And what is going to happen to me when something ugly comes up in me? Am I in danger of being thrown out also? Do you want me to behave? The first thing to remember is that I am not a moralist. I am not a Puritan. But I have certainly some aesthetic sense. To me, beauty is higher than virtue, any virtue. Beauty is higher than good, than truth. In the East we have this trinity, Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. Satyam means truth. Shivam means the good, and Sundaram means the beautiful. The beautiful is the highest. First you encounter Satyam, the truth, then Shivam, the good, and then Sundaram, the beautiful. The beautiful to me is the most significant phenomenon. So I will not allow anything ugly to happen in my commune. In this Buddha field, everybody has to learn to be a little more aesthetic. So I am not telling you to behave. I am only telling you to be a little more aware, a little more intelligent. To very devout Catholic women, Signora Brambilla and Signora Rossi are chatting, "I am really in trouble," moans Brambilla. "My apartment has a gutter, only two tiny rooms, and there lives me and my seven children. And I am sure that I am pregnant again. Dio mio, what a disaster." Signora Rossi looks at her very surprised and says, "I have only two children and that's a plenty. I don't want no more. Why don't you do something about it?" "What's there to do?" cried Signora Brambilla. "The Pope has forbidden the pill." "The pill? Yes, sir," replied Signora Rossi, "but I always crush it into a little powder." Yes, that much intelligence is needed. If the pill is forbidden, crush it into powder. All that I require is a little bit of intelligence. Ugliness is unintelligence. Beauty is intelligence. I don't want you to behave, but I want you to be more alert. And certainly nobody is going to throw anybody out. But that's the language Indians understand. They don't understand any other language. Since that day, nothing like that has happened again. And it will not happen. Not that anybody is going to throw anybody out. That is not my way. I am not a person who can be angry at all, but I can pretend to be angry. I can act to be angry. And I know what language is to be understood, and I use that language. Two fellows went duck hunting. One told his newfound friend that he was known to snore at night, and if he did hear him snoring, to simply get up and shake him. Shortly after they turned out the lights, his buddy went over to his bunk and kissed him on the cheek. There was no snoring that night. Today I have got little difficult jokes. P people are unconscious, they need to be hit exactly on the head. Then a little bit consciousness comes to them. A crew was unloading a tank car of highly explosive chemicals when it exploded. Two men were killing and half a dozen were knocked unconscious. As the ambulance attendants were carrying one of the men on a stretcher, he regained consciousness. Just as he did, his hands fell over the side of the stretcher, feeling nothing but air. He let out a great moan and said, "Ah, my God, I have not even hit ground yet." The lady of the house called to the maid downstairs, "Has the milkman come yet, Lucy?" "No, ma'am, but he is already starting to breathe heavy." Don't be too much afraid. Nobody is going to throw you out. And if something ugly comes up in you, we have many groups here. Those groups are meant for you to be as ugly as you can be. Those groups are for catharsis, but not in the commune, not in the Buddha hall. Otherwise you see all around guards are sitting. Just try to cough enough for today.
Thank you.